So we as men tend to hide the unsavory parts of ourselves. We tend to hide our shadow from our partners, from our friends. And what we need to do is to start to bring it forward, to start to talk about these things that we have shame around, that we have guilt around, that we dislike about ourselves, rather than, you know, sort of hoarding them to ourselves and hiding it in the darkness, waiting for ourselves to collapse. You know, it's like, I usually ask them, it's like, are you waiting for rock bottom to happen before change occurs? And for a lot of men, they fundamentally believe that. They don't think that they can stop drinking until their wife leaves them. You know, they choose the alcohol over the marriage. They sabotage the marriage. They sabotage their home for something external.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guilt of Dad show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills, and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, along with topics and stories that will captivate you and impact your life. If you're an existing listener, then thanks for your ongoing support of the podcast. I'm really grateful to you for diving into the conversations that I'm having. If you just discovered the podcast, then welcome to the show. Check back through the past episodes, as I'm sure there'll be some that pique your interest. To you guys, the dads that listen, you motivate and inspire me to forge ahead with the Guild of Dads and help as many dads as I can through the conversations that I have. There are a couple of ways you can get involved with the Guild of Dads movement. You can reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I'm doing a lot on Twitter right now. Or also, just drop me an email, joe@guildofdads.com. I've had some really nice messages from those of you that are listening and have been impacted by the podcast, which really are humbling for me, to say the least. You can also join our rapidly growing free Facebook group and join the Guild. Over in there, you'll find a positive, encouraging community of dads on life's journey. I'm very pleased to say that my message is resonating. A message of personal growth and brotherhood and celebrating men and dads, along with the far-reaching impact we can have on society. I'm proud to be on this journey with you guys, leading this movement for you. So what do you get on this podcast? Each week we deliver content and conversations that will expand what you think is possible for yourself, enabling you to positively impact yourself, all areas of your life, and the lives of those that surround you. We do this by speaking to fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs, and ultra-athletes, professors, psychologists, men's coaches, and also some ordinary dads just like you that are doing some extraordinary and impactful things. Every episode will give you either actionable resources to take away or a different perspective on a particular topic. These conversations are important and necessary because the world is changing. The role of dads and men is constantly under the spotlight, sometimes even under attack. And my dream is to make Guild of Dads the go-to resource for dads like you who want to make some change in your life and live lives of vision, action, and meaning. So what's today's episode about? Shadow work, and more specifically, our shadows. And now, this isn't some dark world concept from Lord of the Rings. It's a concept developed by Jung that helps us get in touch with and overcome some of the parts of ourselves that we don't always like, and the parts of ourselves that work against us. Many men are discovering it and using it to overcome themselves. And it's described in a multitude of texts as something very powerful to do if leveraged correctly. So that's what today's episode is about. I'm joined by accomplished TEDx speaker, shadow work therapist and teacher, podcaster and founder of the Man Talks community, Connor Beaton. After going through his own struggles as a man, Connor developed an innovative approach to healing the shadow, part of our psyche that causes us to self-sabotage. By drawing from experiential and training-based methodologies like Jungian psychology, semantic therapy, along with transformative breathwork and meditative practices. He now has been working for almost a decade to help men and women from all over the world walk through their darkness and grow in the realms of mental clarity, relational communication, actualizing their potential, and sexual intimacy. Just quickly, before we jump into today's podcast, there's a ton of actionable resources today on this one. So my suggestion to you is to pause this podcast now, grab a pen and paper, because you want to make some notes. And now to my conversation with Connor. Connor, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
And as a new dad, I know you've had a new arrival in the last few months. So I can actually welcome you to the Guild of Dads podcast as a fellow dad now as well. So how's things going with that?
It's going great. It's my son was born 6 months ago. He turned 6 months on Monday, actually. And I love it. I love it. He's such a little joy, you know, in between emails and sessions, because, you know, just the way that the world is right now, I can, you know, run out into the living room and see him, which is pretty freaking awesome. So I've been enjoying every minute of it. You know, my sleep has been dramatically impacted, but my body's adjusted, and my routines have adjusted accordingly, but I'm loving it, man. It's like, you know, I think it's one of those experiences to watch consciousness unfold is such a beautiful gift that I didn't know I wanted to receive. You know, watching him slowly start to interact with the world around him and play with things, and literally like watching his consciousness come online and his mind start to interact with things in a different way has been incredible. It leaves me in awe, really, at life. It's kind of like a spiritual experience, I guess you could say, becoming a dad.
Yeah, and it's almost like a mirror into your own soul as well, because you kind of begin to reflect back on meaning is always a big thing for me, and I think you begin to reflect back on really the kind of meaning of life and the things that are the most important to you. It kind of does a hard reset on stuff very quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like, you know, having my son, I've done some pretty cool stuff in my life, and having my son, you know, it's just one of those moments where it's like, yeah, all that other shit pales in comparison to just being here with my boy and being present with him and getting to spend a few moments of time with him is pretty special and unique. I'm sure I might feel different when he's, you know, 13 and telling me to shove it and, you know, in my face and going through his rebellious years. I'll be like, where's my 6 month old that can't talk smack to me? But for right now, it's just pure joy.
Yeah. Dad, I'm on Xbox. I'm not interested in what you're saying right now. Okay.
Right. I don't want to talk about existential, you know, realities or philosophies. Yeah.
Now, I'm really pleased to be speaking to you today, because I've been listening to you for a little while now. And what I love about the way you put across things, Connor, is that you have a very calm, relaxing and soothing voice to listen to. It's kind of like a warm cup of coffee or when you're sitting indoors on a rainy day, and it's a rainy day outside. And I think your kind of superpower, if you like, is the kind of the gentle manner in which you unpackage very difficult things. And I think what's nice about it is that in the kind of man space and dad space, there's some very hard-edged, you know, very kind of alpha characters around, and around that kind of topic of men and masculinity. But on the other side, you've got very kind of sort of soft and fluffy characters that don't really kind of get to the nub of it, sort of thing. But you're able to take stuff, like I said to you before we came on air, you're able to take stuff that is quite abstract and kind of metaphysical in a lot of respects and translate these into kind of tangible concepts that people can understand and kind of conceptualize. And that is one of the reasons that I wanted to speak to you today. Because on your podcast, you talk about the work that you've done on your shadow, what you call shadow work. And I recently had the privilege of reading two books by Richard Rohr, Falling Upwards, and James Hollis, Finding Meaning in Midlife, I think it's called. And they mentioned, both books mentioned this shadow work in terms of Jungian psychology. For those listening, can you explain what a person's shadow is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a fascinating concept and part of our psyche, and I'll try and condense it down into a simple form. So really the shadow is, we could consider it as a false self. So an alter ego almost. And, you know, Jung talked about how when we reject certain parts of ourself, when we abandon or neglect or reject certain parts of ourselves. Those things don't go anywhere, right? They manifest as the shadow, which comes back to sabotage our most well-formed intentions. So the idea here is that, let's say, you know, you grew up in an environment where you were bullied on for your intelligence, right? You were picked on for your intelligence. And you start to believe this story, this narrative, I'm not smart. I'm not intelligent. I'll never amount to anything. And whether that was from a parent, a step parent, an uncle, a kid at school, that part of you turns into an inferiority. And that inferiority is in the shadow. And whenever you are trying to make progress, right, you're trying to, impress a woman that you're dating with your intellectual prowess of something that you just read or listened to on a podcast, or you are trying to get a promotion at work. Let's just say that's a good example. You're trying to get a promotion at work. The shadow is the part of you that will start to sabotage, that entices you to stay up late and have that extra drink before the big meeting in the morning, that convinces you to stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning and watch pornography rather than going to bed or preparing for the keynote that you need to give, right? So it is the part of you that actively works against your best intention, right? The man, the father, the husband, the business leader that you know fundamentally you are capable of being, you know you're capable of becoming, it's the part that's working against you. So it's very important, it's vital that we as men start to come into contact with that, that we start to see the aspects of ourselves that are opposing the direction that we're trying to take our finances, our health, our relationship, our sex life, our career, our business, because there are internal forces that are working against you. And if we blind ourselves to that, we will spin out of control and we'll call it fate, right? We'll just say like, I don't know, nothing. The cards are always stacked against me, and we'll start to embody this victim, right? Mm-hmm. Things never work out for me. You know, women don't like me. My boss doesn't like me. And we'll start to become this victim, and we can't see that we're actually just consumed by this part of us that's kind of like a wrecking ball towards our greater aims, our greater endeavors, our higher self, our best version. So that's kind of a summation. So the shadow is just a part of you. It's an alter ego. It's a false self. And it's developed over the course of your life where you have been made to feel inferior. It's developed in moments where you felt abandoned or neglected or rejected or embarrassed, right? So, you know, if you're somebody that experienced infidelity in a relationship, let's just say, that had an impact on you. And it probably caused some insecurities. You know, I see a lot of men who in their first relationship, right, in high school, the woman that they lost their virginity to, she cheats on him, you know, and it creates this insecurity, like there must be something wrong with me. So his sexual potency is suddenly robbed of him a little bit and put in the shadow, where he needs to act in a certain way to counter that. So the shadow is formed in all these experiences. But the beautiful part of it is that, you know, as men, we're kind of obsessed with our potential is also laying dormant in the shadow. So it's also, if we want to access some of our potential, if we want to start to move in the direction of what we think we're capable of, we have to face these inferior parts of ourselves that we have neglected. So things like our inner critic, you know, that inner dialogue where we talk smack to ourselves and we self-deprecate and for some men, you know, abuse themselves. You know, if you listen to the inner dialogue of how some men speak to themselves, it's really abhorrent. Like, it's really terrible, you know, and they're carrying on the abusive parent internally. So maybe I'll just pause there, because I feel like I gave you a lot of information on what the shadow is and how it manifests. And we'll stop there for a sec.
It sounds like the way you describe it, it's like you've got Windows 95 software running on a 2021 PC, but the problem is the Windows 95 software isn't compatible with your life as it is today, it's something that is kind of is compatible or served you at some point in the past.
I think just to use that analogy, it's almost as like, imagine that you had a Mac computer. I'm a Mac guy. And and you have on your Mac operating system, when you boot up the computer, you have your Mac operating system running normally, but in the background is Windows 95. So running behind the scenes is Windows 95. And that program is running counter to what the Mac operating system is trying to do. So your forward-fronting operating system, right? I want to have a great marriage. I want to be a good father. I want to be financially successful. I want to be healthy physically. Those are your front-facing primary drives. And that's your, you know, that's some of your front-facing primary programming. But behind that is the shadow saying, you're not worthy. You don't deserve it. You'll never amount to anything. You're a fat, lazy slob. You know, like whatever the internal dialogue is. And that is the shadow sabotaging you from actually running the program properly. So I like that analogy. We'll keep with that.
Yeah. And in terms of like how it manifests itself in a man's life and the kind of when the cork comes out of the bottle, so to speak, how does it show itself or not show itself as the case may be? What are the problem, the kind of typical problems that you see it kind of causing and when stuff gets a bit out of control for guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime that your actions and your intent are not aligned, this is where your shadow is at play, right? So if what you are, if what your intention is in your relationship, let's just say, is to have, you know, a great date night and to have, take your partner out and have a nice date and then, you know, have some wild and crazy sex after. And, or just, you know, normal loving sex. That's fine too. So just the sex is good. And that's your intent, but your action turns out to be that you go on the date, you pick a fight, you're criticizing the way that she looks or what she says. You know, you're rude to the waiter and you sabotage on the way home. And then you shut down when you get back to the house and rather than continuing to open up, you sabotage and you say, you know what, screw you. I'm sleeping downstairs on the couch and you shut down and you pull away. So that's a very real example of where your intent is very different from, and I'm giving you an extreme version to try and make it very apparent. That's an example of where your intent and your action aren't matching. And likely that behavior, that reactivity, that volatility that man is experiencing in that moment, that's his shadow. So he wants something. He wants to feel connected to his partner. He wants to have a great date night. He wants to feel sexually connected to her or him. And instead, what he gets is reactivity. He's volatile. He's angry. He's short. He's cutting. He's critical. And when he reflects the next day, he's like, why did I say those things? Why did I do those things? Why did I act like such a jerk and an asshole? That's his shadow at play. That's his inferiorities and his insecurities that are manifesting. And for some men, it'll show up within their inner critic, right? Within their inner dialogue and how they speak to themselves. And for other men, it'll externally manifest. So they'll really harshly judge their partner. They'll criticize them. They'll be mean to them. They'll push them away actively, or they'll pull them close and then they'll push them away. And really what it does is it ensures that you as a man don't get your needs met. Right? You can never really get your needs met when the shadow is at play. So those are a couple of real examples. For me, my shadow was about hiding things. So the reason why I got into this work was I was very unfaithful in a lot of relationships. I felt completely out of control. I used a lot of pornography. And I found myself in a relationship that I really enjoyed. I loved this woman that I was with, but I was constantly unfaithful. And I had been unfaithful in every relationship leading up to that point. And I kind of knew it was all coming to a head. And there was a part of me that believed that I couldn't change, that I couldn't get out of this behavior cycle of infidelity, of lying, of cheating, of feeling ashamed of myself until I hit some form of rock bottom, until things really just sort of blew up. And that's exactly what happened, right? She found out that I was that I was cheating. She had found out that I was being unfaithful. My career started to fall apart. And rather than talk to people, rather than tell people what was actually going on in my life, I isolated even more. So I, you know, moved everything into storage. I lived out of the back of my car for a few weeks. And, you know, my pride was so big and my ego was so big that I didn't want people to know what was actually going on with me behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So that's a very clear example of the false self, right? On the one hand, I was this nice, loving man. I had a great career. You know, on the outside, I looked confident. I looked happy. But behind the scenes, I felt like a disaster. You know, I was staying up late and drinking. I was going out and partying. You know, I had all these women on the side and nobody knew about them. It'd be a different thing if those two pieces were a part of a cohesive personality. But for the most part, I was acting in very different ways. And I think a lot of men do that, right? They feel like they need to uphold this image of who they need to be. They need to be strong. They need to be confident. You know, they need to be capable and have it all together. And so they don't really open up to the people around them. And so they wear this mask with their partners, with their friends. And behind the scenes is all of this stuff that no one really knows about. So after I hit rock bottom, I started to connect with men in my life. And what I found was that most of them were experiencing something very similarly. You know, guys who I, on the surface, I thought their business was doing very well, but they were on the verge of bankruptcy. Men who I thought had phenomenal relationships who had also been having an affair. And yet I didn't know about any of these pieces. And so we as men tend to hide the unsavory parts of ourselves. We tend to hide our shadow from our partners, from our friends. And what we need to do is to start to bring it forward, to start to talk about these things that we have shame around, that we have guilt around, that we dislike about ourselves, rather than, you know, sort of hoarding them to ourselves and hiding it in the darkness, waiting for ourselves to collapse. You know, it's like, I usually ask them, it's like, are you waiting for rock bottom to happen before change occurs? And for a lot of men, they fundamentally believe that. They don't think that they can stop drinking until their wife leaves them. You know, they choose the alcohol over the marriage. They sabotage the marriage. They sabotage their home for something external. So again, I know I said a lot there, but I'll, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting you say that, because I put a post on Instagram the other day, actually. And one thing that I've noticed with guys is that they typically, and I say with guys, I'm going to actually say us guys, because I think it's a lot of us do it. And it's this notion of kind of then not pulling the ripcord on your parachute until you're about a meter, or in terms of you guys, a yard from the ground. And I think this is kind of one of the things that I think guys struggle with, that they know something's not right, but they just pull the ripcord too late when they're about to have impact on the ground and crash badly. And I think I was talking to someone yesterday about this, and I think one of the difficulties that I think guys have this kind of slightly hubristic way of looking at things, in the sense that we don't know what we don't know, but often we're like, actually, we don't care what we don't know, because we feel that we know everything and we can hold this stuff together and we can keep this kind of thing going until such time as catastrophically the wheels fall off the wagon and then things are in a really bad place, sort of thing. And it's just an interesting, and do you think that men in particular, why do you think for men in particular, we're not equipped to do this kind of deep work and face down the things that kind of torment us? I mean, I talk to guys in my audience about this, the notion of kind of facing the man in the mirror, if that makes any sense. And, but why do you think we're so reluctant to go towards that kind of, that pain barrier, if that makes any sense?
Yeah. I mean, so this is a bit of a complicated question, but I'll answer it succinctly at first, maybe then unpack it. So I think it's a few reasons. One, I think culturally we've boxed men into one-dimensional masculinity. So we've told men, you need to be a very certain way as a man. You need to be strong. You need to be invulnerable. You need to show no weakness. You need to be hyper competitive. You need to succeed. And you need to do those things at all costs. And if you don't, you are not a man. You are less of a man for not having done those things. So the real estate that we can occupy as men is quite small. And you know, I sometimes talk about the one rule of men that creates that one-dimensional masculinity, which is very similar to Fight Club, right? You don't, the first rule of Fight Club, don't talk about Fight Club. The first rule of being a man, you don't talk about what it's like to be a man, right? You just don't say shit, right? So if you're a man who's going through a divorce, can I swear on your show, by the way?
You can swear. I just mark it as explicit on iTunes.
Okay. I'm so used to, I feel like you, like the Brits swear quite a bit. So I thought it was going to be okay.
No, you can swear. It's fine. It's always funny when I hear Jordan Peterson say bloody hell, because it's I don't know whether it's something that Canadians say more than Americans, but hang on a minute. And the thing is Canadians have this ever so different sound to their vowel sound as well, so they've got that oot like a Scotsman would, like oot. They say we're going outside like that,
right?
That's my very bad Scottish Canadian accent.
No, it's good. Jordan Peterson is from the same province that I'm from in Canada, and we grew up a couple of hours from each other, although he's quite a bit older than me. But so, you know, the one rule of men is you don't talk about what it's like to be a man, right? So if you're a man who's going through divorce, struggling with health issues, you know, his kids struggling in some way with a learning disability, or he's struggling at work, you just don't talk about those things. Because if you do, you're seen as weak. You're seen as, you know, being more feminine, being a woman in some capacity, right? As if having struggles is somehow inherently only for women. You know, it's asinine. It's completely backwards. And we have eradicated some of the substructures within masculine culture that are actually necessary for us as men to support one another through the challenges and obstacles that we will inherently face as men in our modern society. There are a lot of problems that men face today, both personally, maritally, financially, in their health, and most importantly, existentially. There are a lot of men facing some real existential problems in our life right now. And we have dissolved some of the social frameworks that allow men to connect and say, I'm really struggling. You know, I'm struggling with what's happening with COVID. I'm struggling in my marriage. I don't know how to deal with this issue, without another man telling him how to fix that problem, or to drink it off, or to just, you know, go and bang somebody else and feel better about themselves. And I know that might be harsh. I know I might be using sort of like very direct, harsh language. But I think that that's the reality that most men inhabit, is when they tell another man, I'm struggling, what they're usually met with is some form of get over it, or don't worry about it, or here's how you should fix it, rather than some form of compassion and connection with, that sounds really freaking hard. You know, what's that like for you? And so we've also collapsed the hierarchical substructure within masculinity, where men used to have mentors to go to. You know, they used to have elders that they could call upon in these times of need. And that brings me to the final piece, which is we have largely eliminated any form of initiatory practices within our culture. So men no longer are initiated into manhood. There's just this random transition that happens, right? You go from being a boy to getting, you know, hard-ons and boners in class and on the school bus, to finding yourself all of a sudden in college, to working a 9-to-5 job, you know, making however much money with a wife and kids. And nowhere in between have you been initiated into the hardships of what it means to be an adult, what it means to be a man. Mm-hmm. And for most men, they feel this. It's not something that they think, right? They don't think, have I earned my stripes as a man? Do I feel worthy of the man that I am? They feel it in their bones. They feel it in their body, that somehow they know, even they might be 40, they might be 50, they might be 30 years old, but they'll feel internally like, I'm not the capable man that I want to be. I haven't really faced any kind of hardship or the hardship that I think I should have faced. And so what ends up happening is they do what I did and they create a kind of pseudo initiation experience by collapsing and cratering their life, right? By blowing the whole thing up. And this is your classic midlife crisis, right? When a man goes through a midlife crisis, what he's actually experiencing is that he feels like he's been a boy in a man's body for so long that he can't carry the responsibility anymore, any longer. And he feels like he has this undue, unjust responsibility that he's been carrying around from his family, his finances, his work, his career, et cetera. And it's too much because he's never been properly initiated into mature manhood. Mm. And that is vacant in our culture. You know, the reason why people like Jordan Peterson are so prominent is because there is something inherent within him that symbolizes mature masculinity, that is a representation of the archetypal father figure within our culture that has largely been missing. And for a lot of men, they have lacked proper male role models. So not only have they not been initiated, but they haven't seen initiated men. They don't even know what it looks like. There's just been this vacuum of mature masculinity, right? Kids that have gone through a divorce, you know, and their father has not been there. I mean, that's, you know, pretty common where they see their dad once or twice a month, or they have a stepfather that's, you know, abusive or not present. Or they have a father that's there, but he's an alcoholic or he's emotionally disconnected and he's not teaching that boy how to enter into manhood. So there's no apprenticeship. There's no initiation. There's no mentoring. And it's very rare. And what's interesting for me is that after my life fell apart, after I created this sort of pseudo initiation in my life by cratering the whole thing, I had a mentor show up. And he was later in his years, he was, you know, mid to late 70s. And he took me under his wing and he taught me about Jungian psychology and cognitive behavioral therapy. And he walked me through and helped me understand the challenges that I had created in my life. And he really acted as this mature masculine father figure that I had lacked in my life. And that I didn't even know that I needed. And so I spent 2.5 years apprenticing with him, like old school apprenticeship, you know, like I would help with his asparagus. You know, he had this massive asparagus garden for whatever reason. He loved asparagus. And so I would help like plant and cultivate the asparagus. I would help chop down trees on his property and chop wood for him because he was getting quite old and he couldn't do it. And in turn, he would impart his wisdom on me of psychology and alchemy and cognitive behavioral therapy, positive psychology, neuro-linguistics programming, like all these different modalities that he had learned along the years. And that type of apprenticeship and mentorship is very rare in our culture for a man to actually have. So those are some of the things that I think create this challenge that a lot of us as men have. And so because of that, we have all of this shadow that we don't know how to deal with. We have all this pain that we don't know how to metabolize. You know, a lot of men are, what I usually say is that a man's work begins in pain. Like your work as a man begins with how you deal with your own pain. Because if you don't know how to deal with it, I guarantee you the world is having to deal with it for you. Your wife is having to deal with your pain for you. Your children are having to deal with your pain for you. And that's where we need to start. We need to retrain men in the skill of being able to metabolize and work with their own pain and to be able to work with the pain of one another.
Gents, I'm going to jump into the conversation here very quickly. You've probably heard me mention that putting out a regular podcast involves a substantial investment of both time and money to make it happen. Guild of Dads isn't sponsored, and I'm 100% self-funded. So I've recently set up a service called Ko-Fi, which means if you like and appreciate what I'm doing with the Guild of Dads podcast and Facebook group, or even if you want to follow me on social media, then you can buy me a coffee to say thanks and support my work. just head on over to guildofdads.com and you'll see a small coffee cup at the bottom left-hand side of the screen entitled Donate. You can also follow me on there, so I'll be posting updates and some other cool stuff just to let you know what I'm up to. Any of you guys helping to support the podcast and group by donating will get a shout out on both platforms as my thanks to you for getting behind what I'm doing. If you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives and transform into the men and dads they always wanted to be. So you'll be in amazing company. And now back to today's conversation. Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because one of the kind of things that I've noticed in the last little while, and this is I think partly why there is an interest in the ancient traditions like Stoicism and these, I can't help thinking this current point in time, guy, like you say, guys have somehow forgotten what it means to have a tribe of people around them, B, have elders that they can turn to, but also C, they've forgotten how to navigate the psychological experience of the ebb and flow of life that they're going to go through. And that's why we're turning back thousands of years to look to these ancient traditions to relearn this. And I think what I notice a lot with guys is that the modern world has given us loads of material stuff. And you know, I sort of mentioned that meaning is one of the things that I am quite interested in. And I often wonder whether guys, they attach a lot of their value and their meaning to material. So, you know, a guy will think, actually, I want my life, the vision for my life is that I want to settle down, get married, have kids, get a decent car, have a house and whatever and stuff. And then they have all this stuff. And then after they have had kids, that's kind of where the plan ended. And then all of a sudden there's this kind of no man's land. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, well, okay, so I've got all these things that I thought that would make me happy and make me feel satisfied and give my life meaning. But in actual fact, I've got all this stuff, but I've still got this kind of feeling in my kind of solar plexus that I wake up every day and something's missing here. Mm-hmm. And so I think I often talk about it as like a crossroads of man. Men are like this kind of crossroads that they hit, mm-hmm. where they kind of like, it's not about earning more money and it's not about accomplishments and it's not about all these things. It's something kind of deeper down than that where I think there is this the shadow that you talk about and also kind of meaning and a load of other things kind of clash together. And I've been talking to quite a few people in the UK about postnatal mental health in men as well, because it's becoming rapidly recognize that after a child is born, particularly if mum has gone through a traumatic birth, there is a period in which guys can go through postnatal depression as well. And I was talking to some experts in this recently, and I said, look, let me hit you with a hypothesis on this. Is there a point at which all of a sudden this stuff, you know, just after the child is born, plus the lacking meaning in their life, plus what you're describing as well, this stuff all collides like a massive gate car crash between sort of 35 and 50. And guys are like, what? What the hell is going on here? And I'm just kind of hypothesizing on this a bit, Connor, but it just, you know, when you begin to see these things, mm-hmm. and you're like, hang on a minute, all of these things are happening at once and it's like a perfect storm. Plus you throw into the mix, you know, the high rate of, you know, the highest percentage of guys taking their own lives is in that age group as well. So it's perfect shitstorm almost, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few things in there. Like one, after your child is born, a man's testosterone drops sometimes by 50%, mm. right? So that's massive. right? So most, I mean, and most men don't know about that, but there's a good amount of research that shows that that's true. When you have a child, your testosterone for the months after, not a couple of days, the months after, because your body is flooding with oxytocin and, you know, bonding hormones and chemicals, your testosterone is significantly reduced. So that is the motivator neurochemical, right? Testosterone is the motivational neurochemical. And again, there's a lot of research to go into that, both within men and within women. But within men, when that significant of a drop happens, our testosterone levels are also correlated to our energy levels. So a lot of men that start to experience a significant drop in testosterone, that's where they enter into depression. And where does that happen? Usually between 40 and 44. And where do we see the second wave of suicide rates happening? Usually between 40 and 44, right? It also correlates with where most divorces are happening for men. So those years are really vital, right? But like you're saying, there's also this kind of void in meaning that a lot of men are experiencing. Like we've been corporatized and domesticated in a lot of ways and told that, you know, you're a very valuable man if you can earn a lot of money and buy a lot of shit. And for the most part, when that happens, we still feel empty. You know, like Tony Robbins has this great saying where he says, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. Well, how many men have experienced that? How many men have had the six-figure job, bought the house and the car, had the wife, had the kids, you know, the white picket fence, and disliked it, you know, found themselves at the peak of where they thought they should be professionally and relationally and are completely dissatisfied. And in many ways, it's because we miss out on the fact that we as men want to sharpen ourselves. It's not just about earning or making or accumulating. We want to better ourselves and we want to sharpen ourselves. It is a fundamental drive. I really, truly believe that. Not just because we want to make more money or get a more attractive partner or whatever the case may be, or buy the Porsche, but because we have this inherent drive to hone our skills, to sharpen ourselves with experience, to learn, to create, to build. Like that is just sort of baked within us. And when we deny ourselves of that, we have to fill it with something, right? As the saying goes, nature abhors a vacuum. So when we aren't aiming towards bettering ourselves, we're not aiming towards sharpening ourselves, sharpening the skill of discipline, sharpening our body, sharpening our mind, you know, sharpening how we create certain things or build certain things, whether it's a product or a canoe, you know, like whatever it is. There's a very Canadian thing for you. Go build a canoe. When we don't do those things, we feel sterile. We feel flaccid. You know, we feel ineffective as men. And that is degrading in some ways to us as a man. And, you know, one of the things that I usually say to men is, what do you need to do in your life to feel like a more capable, effective version of yourself? Does it mean you need to wake up in the morning and go to the gym every day? Go do that. Does it mean that you need to face some fears and build some resiliency because you're a wet noodle? Go get in the cold shower every single morning. Force yourself to have a cold shower every single morning. You know, cold showers have been shown to release dopamine, to increase testosterone levels, you know, to help serotonin production. So there's real medical benefits to some of these pieces that we're talking about. But outside of that part, it's the psychological knowing that I, as a man, can go and do hard things, not just hard things that are going to benefit the corporation that I work for, that I'm a cog in the wheel of 100,000 people, but that benefit me, right? That benefit my family, that benefit my marriage, my relationship, my sex life, my children, you know, that there's something powerful about that, and that benefit my community. That's the really big piece. We as men have, in some ways, become ineffective in knowing how to contribute back to our community. Like the real function of initiation is to do two things. One, help a man meet and confront death in some capacity. and to make him more effective so that when he returns to the community, he is a more effective member of the community. He can contribute more effectively to the community. But for most of us, for most of the guys that I work with, and I talk to them, even if they've built successful companies, like I've had the honor and the pleasure to work with NBA all-stars and rock stars and musicians and Fortune 500 CEOs. Like I feel very grateful for the men that I've gotten to work with. But one of the biggest challenges that they face is usually saying, I don't feel an inherent sense of meaning in the work that I do, in what I've created, in who I serve. Like I'm serving people that I don't care about. I'm contributing to people that I don't necessarily matter to me. I want to be helping these people over here. I want to be serving them. I want to be supporting them. I want to be building things for them. And that can create this meaning vacuum. So like you're saying, there is this inherent sort of meaninglessness that a lot of men are trapped in as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And interestingly on the brotherhood that I run, we've been studying David Dada's book, but we've just started studying it this week. And he makes the point there that some guys have this kind of innate feeling that there is a point at which they will have arrived and that life will become easier and that they will, you know, all of a sudden it will be like kind of cresting the top of a like mountain and you're on the downhill stretch sort of thing.
Right.
And it's this kind of almost like a fallacy that we're in, that we think that this is going to, but there comes a point at which actually you have to realize that actually that's not the way it works. And it's going to be like a roller coaster right the way until you kind of leave this planet, whether you like it or not. So you may as well kind of strap yourself in and get ready for the ride sort of thing. And that's kind of daunting for guys because they sort of think, well, shit, I thought this was going to be easy at some point. I thought I was going to understand this and have this kind of cracked. And then a 70-year-old says to him, no, son, you don't ever have this shit cracked. You know what I mean? So
Yeah. And there's always going to be hard aspects to life. And it's, you know, I do think that there is merit and worth in being able to face, it's like, what I usually tell men in relationships is choose a partner that you want to do conflict with. Choose a woman or a man, whatever your orientation is, but choose a partner that you want to do conflict with. Because if you're wanting monogamy, if you're wanting marriage with someone, it's not that there isn't going to be conflict, right? That's the illusion. That's the masculine illusion, right? We crave freedom, right? Data talks about how we crave freedom. And so the illusion that's created is that somehow we'll be able to escape any type of conflict and we'll have this illustrious form of freedom, free from conflict, free from harm, free from wrong, free from anything that's infringing on our capacity to just be. And we have to let that go. So knowing that you're going to be in a relationship maybe for, you know, a couple of years or a couple of decades, choose somebody that you want actively to navigate through conflict with, because that's what most people don't look at. Most men get into a relationship with, how do I find the most attractive woman? How do I try to find the woman that I have the best sex with? How do I find the most intelligent woman? But if you can find a woman that you can have those things with, right? I'm not saying don't have those things, but you can have those things with and move through conflict with. That's an incredible experience. That's a beautiful experience because again, then the relationship becomes a container, a space where you're sharpening yourself as a man, where you are honing your skills, where you have a partner, where you have a woman who can see the best in you. And you can say, here's who I see myself as capable of being as a man. And my expectation is that you hold me accountable to that, that you hold me to that level of excellence. Now you're really on the hook, right? So you better find somebody that you want to hear some hard feedback from.
Yeah. And this reminds me of, funny enough, a discussion I had earlier on, I think it was last year, by a guy called, and actually I'll link you up with the info on this because you'd probably quite dig it actually, a guy called Ed Tronick, who did the still face experiment in babies. I don't know if you've seen this, where basically, so at a point in the past, they thought that the interactions between parents and children were one way. And the still face experiment kind of illustrates that it's a two-way interaction, which you'll understand because you've got a very young baby. But essentially, a baby is sitting in front of a mother and the mother stops into, she's like being all happy and whatever, and then she kind of goes completely still faced, and the baby's kind of quite confused at first, and then all of a sudden starts to get distressed because the mum is kind of like, there's no and so anyway, I interviewed a guy called Ed Tronick and his colleague Sylvia Gold, who wrote this book called The Power of Discord. And what they talk about in this is this notion of mismatch and repair, how we create meaning from our relationships through there being this kind of conflict, this mismatch, and then you come back together again, and it's the repair side of it, and that's how we begin to create these shared meanings in our relationships and experiences. And and that's the thing that kind of jumped out at me when you were saying about that, this notion of it.
Well, and can I just say one thing about the shadow in the relationship? Is that it's okay?
Yeah, sure.
So your shadow is going to show up in your relationship. So the shadow shows up in a few ways, right? It shows up in what you project, what you reject, and what you avoid. So if you really want to see, and then your reactivity, right? So your volatility, your anger, how you show up in conflict. So if you want to see your shadow in a very clear way, look into your relationship and see what you're avoiding in your relationship. What conversation are you avoiding? What intimacy are you avoiding? What fantasy are you avoiding? And you'll see your shadow at play. Look at what you're rejecting. What are you rejecting about your partner, about yourself? What are you rejecting talking about? You'll see your shadow. And then if you can, start to see what you project onto your partner. And that is a little bit more insidious and hidden, but it's usually when you start to use absolutes or universals. So if you start to say to your partner, you never, or you always, your shadow's in control, right? You're mentally hijacked, you're psychologically hijacked. And really you're communicating from this hurt, unconscious place, right? Because is it true that your partner never does or says that thing? Probably not, right? You never give me love or appreciation. You never tell me that I'm good enough or whatever, you know, whatever the man might be saying. And so look at those areas. And then finally, notice your reactivity in your relationship. When do you get upset? When do you become volatile with your partner? That's a really powerful mirror for how your inferiorities and your insecurities are showing up. Because again, it's not about trying to fix her or get her to do something or control your partner or any of those things. Because what a lot of men will do is they externalize when conflict shows up. So they'll start to get in an argument or a conflict with their partner, and immediately they'll go to one of two things. What's wrong with her, or what's wrong with the relationship? Rather than, what am I doing right now? What's happening within me? What am I actually feeling or experiencing? Do I feel insecure about something? Am I experiencing anger or rejection or aloneness in some capacity? So when we tune out from that part, our relationship turns into an object, something that we're trying to get things from, rather than something that's already giving us insight into who we are. So we can use the relationship to sharpen ourselves, to learn about ourselves, to open ourselves, rather than saying, how do I control my partner? How do I fix her? How do I fix the relationship? What's wrong with the relationship? And externalize all of our problems. So I just wanted to drop that in there.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that, because actually I was going to ask you, there was one thing I was going to ask you, to what extent do you think the modern world and stuff like blame, denial, and all these kind of feelings, I mean, have kind of contributed to this externalizing of how we express ourselves. And in terms of that example that you just used, having an argument or a conflict with your partner, guys that are going to be listening to this are going to be like, yeah, but that happens so fast. It's like a million miles an hour that happens. And you know what I'm going to ask you is, how the hell do we slow this down to bring ourselves back into this, what I would term the rational mind, as opposed to the kind of irrational mind, if that actually makes any sense?
Yeah, no, beautiful distinction and great question. So first off, I would just say, you know, a lot of this is about setting your aim as a man towards being more self-led. How do I be a self-led man? That's a question that I always ask myself and the men that I'm around. Part of leadership, part of self-leadership specifically, is being able to regulate your internal system, right? Leadership, by definition, is just a process of social influence where you influence one person or many people towards a common goal or task, right? That's really what leadership is. If you're leading a team, you are directing and influencing the people that inhabit that team towards a common goal or task. Relational leadership and self-leadership is no different. And in order to lead within your relationship, you need to be regulated. You need to have a regulated nervous system and mind and body. So if you're constantly being reactive and hijacked, you know, your nervous system is taking over and you're acting in a very unconscious place. And it does happen very quickly. I'll give you that. It does happen quickly. So what do? We start to look for the triggers. We start to look for the signs that we are becoming reactive. So for most men, what I've seen, and I've worked with thousands of guys now, is that their reactivity starts in their body, either in their belly or their chest or their extremities, right? So maybe they feel like heat in their chest or they feel like vibration in the hand, right? Their partner says something, accuses them of something or gets sad or whatever the case may be. And that man will immediately feel something in the body. So we have to start to notice the feelings in the body first, because if we don't, those feelings, that experience, that emotion will escalate. So if we ignore that and we become reactive when we lash back at our partner, what ends up happening is that anger in the body moves into our head. And that's where we start to respond from. So I'm going to give you four steps, but just let me go sip of water. Long day of talking. So step number one is get familiar with the signs. Every man has different signs. For some men, they will feel like their feet want to run, like it wants to pull them out of the room. For other men, it feels like they want to fight, like they have this visceral, like, I want to mess things up right now. For other men, it'll feel like they collapse in the chest or they get flush in the face, they get heat in their cheeks. So start to notice the physical signs of when you're getting reactive and when you're starting to get hijacked. And I use that language, hijacked, very specifically. And notice the signs of what causes you to be reactive. So what externally happens? Is there something that your wife or your girlfriend says that you know is going to piss you off, where she's actively trying to piss you off, right? Women do that sometimes. They actively try and provoke you to see if you're safe, to see if you're grounded, to see if you can manage your own emotions. Oftentimes they're doing that because they want to share something emotional with you, but they're trying to sort of provoke or stability test you to see if you can receive it. The next thing is,
guys that listen to me regularly will know that it's a shit test or a fitness test.
Yeah, good. Okay, good. I just didn't know if I could call it that. So get familiar with the signs internally, externally. Next is name it out loud, right? If you find yourself in this place where you're like, okay, I can recognize that I'm getting angry right now. Say it out loud. I feel really angry. Not you're making me angry, right? Don't point the blame. Own your experience, right? This is again about self-leadership. So own that you are feeling anger and notice if you are past the threshold of being able to consciously communicate, right? So maybe you can say, you know, I feel angry about what just happened, but I can still communicate. Label that out loud. Or, you know, I feel really pissed off and we need to pause this conversation. So the next thing is know what is a cause for a pause. I know it's a bit of a rhyme scheme, but know what is a cause for a pause. So for me, when I feel anger in the head and I am attacking my partner, she calls it the jackhammer, right? I just start going in and like making my point over and over again and reaffirming my point. That's when I know I'm hijacked. That's when I know no constructive conversation. I know because I've been in that cycle before and every man has. So know when you are hijacked. And if you're hijacked, pause the conversation, full stop. Do not continue to engage. And that might mean that you need to pause and remove yourself. It might mean that you need to, but give your partner a specific time, right? Say, I need to pause. I'll come back to you in an hour. Or I need to pause let me circle back around with you and tell you when I can reconnect. And then go and breathe, do some breath work, take a cold shower, work out, do something physical to get back into your body and out of the mental rumination. What most men will do is that they'll stew in their thoughts, which is not constructive, or they'll try and go and numb out those thoughts by lighting a joint or having a drink or watching some porn or playing some video games. Not helpful, right? You're using an external substance to try and soothe your internal experience. And what you actually need to do is use an internal experience to soothe your internal experience. So you can use things like breath work to bring you back in. And then lastly is say what you're actually feeling, right? If you got reactive, if you feel like you're getting hijacked and what you were actually feeling was embarrassed by what your partner said, or you felt hurt by what she said, or you felt rejected by what she said, label that. I usually say it's easier for a man to say, fuck you, than it is to say I'm hurt. And that's where you need to start to move, is what you said hurt. It wasn't acceptable.
That's interesting. That is a really good kind of step-by-step sort of run through as to the sort of de-escalation steps that I think that you can take in order to kind of kind of center yourself when you get into these. And the thing, what I really liked about what you said there is when you admitted to the, it's important to understand that we all do this. It's not like kind of like, hang on a minute, there's this guy, Connor, he's got a really smooth talking voice and he never gets angry and never gets stressed. We all do this. And that, I think that's again, one of the strengths of these conversations is actually saying like, you know, we all get to this point at some point, but it's that ownership. And I had this situation before that I can relate to that. One of my jobs is to unstack the dishwasher. And I'd not done it for a couple of mornings. And I came into the kitchen and my wife was like, you've not unstacked the dishwasher. And there was this voice in my head, this my rationalization hamster started whirring in its wheel sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, it was screaming at me to rationalize and justify and make some bullshit excuse as to why I hadn't done it. And in the end, I walked into the lounge and I was like, what the fuck are you doing sort of thing? And regained my composure and walked into the kitchen. I was like, you're right. I should have done the dishwasher and now I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. But it's arresting that thought quick enough that you can begin to see it for what it is. It's this almost like this little devil on your shoulder, which is kind of, no, you can make an excuse for this and you can come out with some bullshit about why you didn't do it or whatever. But
yeah.
And it just deflects from taking any ownership of the situation whatsoever.
Yeah, that defensiveness is the shadow, right? That wanting to defend your position, not be wrong, not having done anything wrong, right? To be a good man. And yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example. And the aim is not to be perfect, right? It's not that you never, again, that's the masculine illusion, that you'll get to this place where you never feel anger towards your partner, or you never get reactive, or you never do anything wrong. That's not the hope, right? That's wanting to be invulnerable and non-human. So know that these things will happen. The aim is that you become more effective when they show up, right? So who I am now in my marriage is exponentially more effective at handling those situations than who I was 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Right. So that's the aim, is to become more effective and learn how to navigate those situations with more ownership, with more leadership, with more self-led capacity, and with more self-respect. Because at the end of the day, when we move into that highly defensive, reactive, judgmental, critical position, we usually lose respect for ourselves after. We might not consciously think that because we might blame our partner. But at the end of the day, the one that's really suffering is us, because we disrespect ourselves in those moments, right? Where we don't take ownership. So this is a great example.
And then you get a nice dose wave of shame and guilt comes washing over you as well. Just the double whammy effect afterwards.
So, yeah. Exactly.
Connor, I know you have got something else coming up. So I'm going to wrap up our discussion today. It's one of those, you're kind of want to look at those guests. We could probably do a good another hour or two delving into these subjects and going on a nice trip around the houses and stuff and that. But suffice to say, that is not going to happen today, but maybe on another occasion, possibly. What is the best way for people listening to this podcast to find out about you, a bit more about the work that you do and what you're involved with?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way is at Mantalks on Instagram, or you can just go to mantalks.com and you can tune into my show there. The podcast is called the Mantalks Podcast. And then if you're wanting to dive into some shadow work, I have a free journal that I've created on the website. When you land on the website, you can just download the journal and start to dive into some of these pieces to see, to learn more of what your shadow actually looks like and when it shows up and who it shows up with and how to navigate it.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. I'm going to ask you one more question, which I don't prime any of my guests for, but it won't come as any surprise to you. What is it in life, Connor, that gives you meaning?
What brings me meaning is bringing people through their own pain, their own darkness, their own sabotage mechanisms, and closer to the version of themselves that they know they are capable of being, to help them actually navigate through their obstacles, whether that's working with the trauma that they experienced, healing the abuse that they experienced as a child, but to help them walk through their darkness, to sort of be a shepherd with a light through the darkness of their life, so that they can enter more fully into who they know they're capable of being. That for me is, that's it.
I love it. I love it. And it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you this evening. Like I say, I'm a big fan of yours. I'm a big fan of your work and the way you articulate what you do. And so I want to thank you for spending the time speaking to me today. And I will wish you all the best with your future endeavors and bringing up your new son and how he's going to give you many more moments of joy and meaning in the next little while.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Cheers, man. A big thanks to Connor for joining me. You can check out a ton of his videos over on his Instagram channel. His handle is @mantalks. There is also his website, mantalks.com, which he mentioned, and also connorbeaton.com, which tells you a lot more about Connor as a person as well. As he said in our conversation, grab his free shadow work journal over at mantalks.com. Just go over to the website and you can check it out over there. So what to say about this episode? Deep is the word, I think, that describes it. And if you didn't do so, you may want to listen back and take some notes, particularly on the last part around conflict management in your relationships. There is a ton of useful information in that last little bit, which if you begin to apply it, can make some really big changes. I'm a massive fan of Connor, and he's a fountain of knowledge on how men's psyches operate. But like I said at the outset, his real superpower is translating it into simple to understand and apply principles. So I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I did speaking with him. If you want to link up with me, you can do so, Instagram or Facebook. Mainly Twitter I'm using quite a lot at the moment, using the handle @guildofdads. Let me know what resonated about this episode. Perhaps you've had to overcome some of your, demons in the past, and perhaps you can relate to a lot of the stuff we were talking about these kind of these forces that are operating deep in our psyches that are working against us. Let me know. Drop me an email or reach out on social media. Did I mention that you can now buy me a coffee on my website, guildofdads.com? It's really easy and helps keep the lights on here at Guild of Dads Towers. Just head over to guildofdads.com, click the coffee cup button and go for it. Quick shout out here to one of my community members, Mark Nichols, who shouted me a coffee just this week. Thank you very much, Mark. In order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. Share this podcast with others so that they may benefit from anything you have found useful or interesting. And gents, this is as easy as hitting the share button, putting in the names of 5 other men and saying, hey, check this out. Use the hashtag Guild of Dads on social media and tag me in. I'll shout you out for doing so. The other thing you can do is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which really helps other dads to find the podcast and zone into the message that we're broadcasting here. Right now, the Guild of Dads Facebook group is growing fast, very fast, in fact. If you want to get on board over in there and join up today, where you can get around a lively group of other guys talking about everything dads and being a man and improving themselves as men and dads, you can do so over there. Hopefully, you find something insightful in every episode to share with dads you know. In the meantime, it's been a pleasure today, and live a life of vision, action, and meaning. Apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.